I have Porcelain here in the studio. We're going to do some interview and some live stuff. Here's a track from a CD they brought in. Check out myspace.com/OZPorcelain. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
I remember happier times, running through the city at night to meet you. Maybe you're avoiding my eyes, and I pretend it's gonna be fine to keep you, to keep you. Sick and tired of all your mistakes, and promising that you're gonna change to please me. When you think my heart is repaired, you run back to your little affair discreetly.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org, and my guest is Porcelain, he says, as he brings up every level on the board that we have. How you doing, everybody?
Good, cheers.
Thanks for coming on a rainy Thursday morning. Why don't we just start with introductions, who you are and what you play, and then we'll jump into a live song.
Okay, great. My name's Lo, and I'm the front woman. I'm the lead singer.
My name's Ben, and I play lead guitar.
My name's Asha. I play electric violin.
My name's Richie, and I play the drums.
I'm Ewan, and I play the bass.
All right. Well, let's jump right into it, and then I'm sure we're going to have a lot to talk about. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. What are you going to play for us first?
It's a song called Again.
This is Porcelain on isgoodkillradio.org.
Speak, but I don't talk. I can leave, but I don't move. I just wait for your excuse. And I recognize the scene. It's where you return to me. And I just close my eyes. Hope that this is the last time. But then it happens again. And I forgive you again. Just please don't do this again. But it happens again and 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 again. Happens again. Oh, again and 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 again. Happens again to me. I don't bet, so I don't lose. And I recognize this theme. One part forgiveness, one part need. It's a blank of blood, it's there. Pretending I don't even care. That it happened again. And I forgive you again. Just please don't do this again to me.
I was so afraid that wasn't going to work because we had so many instruments and so many people in this room, but that was absolutely gorgeous. My guest is Porcelain. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. So bands that are very textured and multi-layered like this one, it always starts out without all those layers. It always starts out with one or two people, you know, a guitar, a mattress or something, you know. Where did Porcelain begin?
It started exactly that way, with one or two people, a guitar and a mattress. But the mattress was on a bed, in a bedroom, in Ben's bedroom actually, the guitarist and myself We started an acoustic duo in 99 and we just played covers on Monday nights in his bedroom. And then we started to write songs. And then
Where is this?
This is in Wollongong, Australia. Oh my goodness, I didn't even say where we're from. We're from Australia, from a town called Wollongong in Australia, which is sort of like a little satellite town outside of Sydney. Yeah, and we started working together in his room, and then we kind of branched out and like entered like a local kind of band competition, and did way better in it than we thought we were going to do at the time. And
it was ridiculous. Like we'd been a band for maybe like had a name for our band for like about 2 months, and then we played one of our first shows in this band competition, and you know, there's people like singing along with some of the words, you know, that someone had found a tape of someone who recorded us in our bedroom or something like that. It was just ridiculous.
Yeah. And then we came second in that competition after a band that were horrendous. And so we thought it must be because we don't have instruments, you know, like extra instruments. And that's when we decided to like blow it out and make it the real deal. And we found Richie, our drummer, first. Ben went to university with his older brother, and he said, "Oh, my little brother plays drums." And so we got together with Richie, and that, like, the minute they started jamming, like, we just knew he was going to be our drummer. And then we used to play in a big band with our bass player, Ewan. We've been playing with, we played with him when we were like 15, 16, and Ewan was on sax, Ben was on trumpet, and I was a singer. And we toured around Australia playing like show tunes in high school. And then we bumped into him a couple of years later, and we'd been having trouble nailing a bass player down, and he was like, "Hey, I play bass." And there's a real funny story to go with that we'll tell later. But yeah, and then we actually found our violinist Asha on MySpace. We had a couple of violinists. We had one violinist for a long time, for like 5 years, and then she took a different path, and then so we started to look around, and we end up finding Asha on MySpace, and it's like she's kind of been with us all along. So yeah.
The band that you have now, is that sort of the way you imagined the band developing from the get-go in your mind? Like when it started with just the two of you, did you have any idea that it was going to end up like this? Or was this the direction that you wanted to go?
I think absolutely. Like just from the music that we listened to, we always wanted a band that could perform in this sort of environment, you know, cut down with like Richie on hand drums and everyone on acoustic instruments. But then, you know, a band that could do that at the same time, you know, we always wanted to play venues like the Staples Center. So it's like, you know, we definitely found a combination of people who shared that same vision. And that's the band that we have, you know, before us.
Do you think coming from sort of a small town, did that affect your music as sort of like a big fish in a small pond?
I think that it did and it didn't. Like it did affect our music because we rose quite quickly to becoming the better band, one of the better bands in our township. And I think that really fueled our fire to be like, oh my God, we should take this elsewhere, and we should like really go for it and come to America and try and make it sort of big time, you know, or, you know, get our music out to as many people as possible. But it didn't affect us. It didn't affect us at the same time because, you know, I think that whole big fish in a small pond can really go to someone's head. And then when they go to another place, they find it difficult to play in front of small crowds again. And we've relocated and gone to the bottom of the echelon every single time. So and it's done nothing but humble us. And we'll play to anyone, anywhere, anytime. It's cool.
I'm glad to be a part of that as
well.
Yeah,
cool.
Sort of in your microcosm in Australia, you guys were becoming sort of popular, but you're saying you had to almost start over when you came to Los Angeles and play the smaller venues and work your way up.
Yeah, we were playing at 5,000.
Yeah, we've played like you know, a couple of big shows around the New Year's Eve time and in the city that we're from, Wollongong, to like 5,000 people, and you know, just the madness of looking out and just seeing a sea of faces and people, you know, jumping and moshing and throwing firecrackers in the air and all that sort of stuff. And then when we relocated to the States, I believe our first show at the Joint was to about 3 people, and we progressed. But you know, 2 weeks later, we played there again, and there was about 14 people. And we were like, well, if we just keep doing this enough, then it's going to build, you know, build a following. And one thing that was great about coming from a relatively small town in Australia is that we got to experience, I guess it was like an apprenticeship of sorts, where we got to rise sort of to the top of that scene, and we were doing TV and we were doing radio and, you know, in-store signings and that sort of thing in a relatively small town. And then so when we came here, we've already had a taste of where we want to be, but we just want to be there in the biggest markets around the world. So.
And you knew that with time you would be able to get there if you just kept at it.
Well, I mean, what we always focused on from the start was just the music and our own interpersonal friendships, you know, and seeing how that focus took us to the top of that scene. It's just, you know, we have just tried to apply the same to this scene, and it's been working out well so far.
Was coming to the United States always a given? Did you know that? Was it felt that that's sort of like what you had to do,
yeah,
in order to make it? Or was it something you looked forward to or dread? Or was it something that was imminent? That actually, like, oh, I guess we're going to have to go to America now.
I always thought it was going to be like London, just because I'm actually British born, even though I was raised in Australia. And in my head, we always knew that it was going to, we'd have to go somewhere else, like a big world capital market like London or LA, New York, Nashville, like somewhere where's the place to be, you know, to get a music across as far as we could get it. But, you know, we ended up, you know, coming in contact with people that kept pointing us in this direction, and so we came over for a really short period of time, and then when we got here, I don't know how we imagined being anywhere but here. It's definitely the place that's fostered not only like a large part of our sound, but our work ethic, our standards, and, you know, it's definitely the yardstick by which to measure sort of excellence. There's like the amount of unsigned indie bands, there's like 35,000 unsigned bands in this town, so, you know, to even get signed is like such a success, and, you know, that kind of thing. So I just put my heart behind everybody who's out there just kicking the shit and going for it, you know. It's awesome.
And you guys have gotten some label attention recently as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, we in I believe it was like late 2004, we ended up when we initially came over to the States, we were with a production company from Australia, and then we were fortunate enough to have major label interest, and their interest was, you know, was invested enough to have us signed directly to them with our production company. We're still going to be with them in Australia and really try and come from a roots angle in Australia, because, you know, that's where our heart is. But in terms of like the big American market, we're just really happy to be with a major, because we found the right people who had the same goal and the same vision as us, and they're a big scary monster if you don't have the right people with you. But we were very fortunate.
Yeah, we also don't have a manager, so it allows us to be able to market and have the mentality, like have the indie mentality when it comes to actually pushing our music out there in getting it in the scenes and being able to take an underground attitude. But then we have the budget also to be able to record the music that we want. So it's a great fusion of the two worlds, yeah, and we're really doing it our way, which I think is what being independent is about. It's like being independent but signed. It's weird.
Yeah, no, but it's pretty unusual, and I think that's a big fear for a lot of bands, is that, you know, they feel that they need the labels to get the financing and to get their music out there.
Right.
But there's so many horror stories of labels sort of controlling the music and then people having to give up their artistic integrity and their, you know, indescribable independence, independent indie nature. But it sounds like you guys are able to hang on to both of those things.
Well, it's like moving out of home for the first time. You know, it's like suddenly you get you know, there's a whole different set of responsibilities that come with it, but then another set of freedoms as well. And it's all about the balance of those two. And it's certainly easy to get led astray in the early stages, where when a record company is paying for, you know, your living expenses and paying for you to, you know, to live in this city and that sort of thing.
Pretty much their bitch.
Their bitch. And then one day you wake up and you realize, wait a minute, like, they're actually our bitch, because our CDs pay for all of their jobs, and they're making decisions based on, you know, whether they think an album's going to sell. And so they're making all of these safe decisions. And we all know that, like, everything that breaks through is something that's different and unique and new. And so that's when we started to realize the responsibility actually was on us to you know, take the reins and sort of be more, you know, directive in what we wanted to achieve using their resources.
I think a lot of young people are the ones that suffer. Like, you know, it's not like we're ancient or anything, but like the really young kids that get signed by majors, I don't think that they've quite grown their sense of self yet. And it's really easy for them just to think, oh my God, if I don't say yes to everything that they say, then I'm going to lose my dream. I'm going to lose, you know. And with a band, there's the advantage of there being five of you for one. So you're a little bit of a tour de force. And then also you're being a little bit older, like, you know, we're all average around our mid-20s. So when people say, you know, we wanted to be this way or that way. And it's like, well, then you don't want our band, like, because that's not what we fucking sound like. So,
you guys have had the time to develop your sound. And when someone gets signed too early and they haven't developed their sound, then someone's going to step in and do it for
them.
And
they go through what we call, like, the meat grinder, whereas they get sent around to, like, all the local songwriters who just write a song that they don't care about. They're just trying to make money. And then so the next thing you know, this kid puts out an album with 12 songs he doesn't give a shit about. And then everybody else doesn't give a shit about it either. And he wonders why nobody thinks he's a star. And it's like, it's so fucking sad, you know, but we count our lucky stars every single day that we actually really play music, that we understand what's good and what's bad, and that we also have other talents within the band, like, you know, in terms of from recording to sound engineering to marketing to everybody has different backgrounds that really help the Porcelain Machine be able to move this far without having a manager. So again, as I was saying, it's like the fusion between the underground and the commercial world that's really been able to propel us across the Pacific.
It's fantastic.
And get us here in your room to play you some music.
Why don't we do that? Why don't we go into another live song, and then we come back. I want to talk to each of you about how you learned to play your instrument and what you bring to the Porcelain Sound as an individual. What are you going to play for us next?
We're going to play a song called Lie to Me, and we're going to tune, actually, while we're doing it. So.
That sounds fine. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. If you want to check out more information on this band, you can go to myspace.com/OZPorcelain. And we're going to let them tune their instruments for a second, and then we're going to go right into another live song. Or if you guys need some more time, we can play another track from the CD.
Why don't you go ahead and do that?
Yeah?
Awesome.
What do you recommend?
Track number 5.
All right. That's what we'll do then. We'll play this track from a CD Porcelain brought in. We'll come back, and we'll do some more live stuff. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
Late in a crowded room, I try to walk up to you, but trying to stand out, but I look the same. Now everyone's leaving, and I can't shake the feeling. If you said that you want to, I swear I would haunt you. If I had my way, they would all fade away. And that's way they say. If my breakfast with a group of friends, at least we are not strangers like we were back then. But I still lose myself in every embrace. I never let you catch me staring at your face. We step outside for a while, you confide. Say you're searching for someone to make. Caved in, would it cry?
And we're back on Is Good on killradio.org with Porcelain. We're going to jump right into a live song, and then we'll do some more interview stuff because I'm just dying to know how each of these musicians found their instrument and found themselves in Porcelain. You guys about ready?
Yeah.
All right. Let's do it.
Photograph of you shying away from the camera, the one that I love, the one that you hate. And it occurs to me that a part of me, a part of you, they go. There's peace in our words, we stare at our hands. There are words in silence that only the subconscious understands. And you want it to, you feel it too. Like it's been ages, but we're not a fresh sheet. We're scribbled on pages, and you cannot say, I cannot say, we know. So we hang up and walk away, think about what we wish we could say, but denial has a way of hiding words sometimes. So we think of what we had and what we got.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org, and my guest is Porcelain. All right, everybody, grab a mic. Why don't we just we'll do this clockwise, and we'll start with Asha. That thing isn't surgically attached, right?
it's strapped on. I can take it off.
So describe for our audience what it is that you're playing, because I've actually never seen an electric violin.
I'm playing a 7-string electric violin. It looks like a flying V guitar, and I don't hold it under my neck. I actually strap it on. Yep.
Is that just because you're up there playing so long, after a while it just hurts your neck, try to support it?
Yeah, I was actually having neck and back problems because I play the viola also, and it was starting to hurt. So I actually found this instrument, and it actually doesn't hurt at all because I don't hold it under my neck, and it makes it a lot easier to sing as well.
Now, how did you start playing violin?
I started when I was 6. I saw a group of little Suzuki kids. It says Suzuki method is a classical method, and I begged my mom to let me play. So I started that, and I graduated with a music degree, all classical, up through college. And then when I got out, I said, you know, I really want to do something besides classical. And there was something missing, and that's when I started to do more rock and jazz, blues.
While you were playing all this classical music, were you, you know, secretly sulking off somewhere with a Walkman listening to rock music? Did you have, were there sort of like, oh, God, I wish I could play with that kind of band?
I actually didn't even know I could do violin in a rock band. It wasn't even a thought that crossed my head. I thought, yeah.
There is something unusual about a violin in a rock band. It almost takes on an air of like, it's almost like having another vocalist, because you're telling an additional story. It's not just it's not like a backup instrument or rhythm instrument, you know? So how do you see yourself like in Porcelain? Like, what do you see yourself bringing to the band?
I guess the parts that I do are a lot more lyrical, rather than like heavy rock or anything like that. I guess there's different kinds of stuff that we do. Some are a little more rock and kind of like the sometimes I'm jumping around with the violin. Sometimes it's more just kind of the lyrical.
But you've never taken your violin and like smashed it into an amp or anything?
Oh, I would never
set
do
it on
this
fire.
No.
It's your prized possession,
yeah,
right?
It's my baby. Yeah.
So and you found or Porcelain found you on MySpace, or you found Porcelain?
They found me on MySpace. Yeah, and I had actually on MySpace you always hear from just random people, and I'd gotten requests to do session work or play in different random bands, and I'd gotten quite a bit of that. And then I saw Porcelain, and they sent me an email, and I was like, oh, another one of those things. And I actually went and checked the music out, and I was like, wow, this is really great stuff. So I went in to audition with them, and I was like 2 hours late, and I'm never late, and I was so upset. I felt terrible.
Was it raining, or?
It actually wasn't even raining. It was a nice day out. So I had no excuse. And they were so sweet, and it was just, I mean, I wanted to be part of the band immediately. And luckily they chose me.
did you guys, you already knew that you definitely wanted a string instrument in this this act?
Well,
we had one before.
We had one right in Australia. Yeah, we had a girl who played with us for like 5 years, and yeah, it was this, and it was funny because it wasn't even like a friend of ours who we were like, oh yeah, you can play too. It was like, we knew, like Ben was just like, I really want a violin in the band, and I was like, yeah, I could dig a violin. And so actually went looking for that.
I think just a lot of my favorite songs had, you know, violin of some sorts in them. And I mean, more times than not, I guess they were probably string sections, but being relatively inexperienced at the time, like, was just like, oh, there's one violin, like, surely that'll, you know, make our music sound like all these grand songs with these orchestras in them. So I guess it came from that place, you know.
Yeah, and it was weird because in 99, when we put the band together, it wasn't like cool to have a violin in your band at all. Like, we'd turn up and play, and they'd look at us with this violin, and they'd be like, "Are you fucking kidding me? Like, you're not."
You see a lot more of it now, but yeah.
Well, nowadays, and it's so funny because like now, as we're starting to like come out and get a buzz and be out on the scene and stuff, it looks like the violin was an afterthought, but it's actually was there long before people put violins and cellos and things in bands. It's like the mandatory, we call it like the mandatory cello. You know how when people are like all acoustic acts and they're right on stage, like, yeah, I'm just like, I'm just expanding and I've got a cello now. And you know, it's like, it's starting to be like, oh really? You know, but we use the violin as like another voice, as you were mentioning earlier. It's
right.
Like we
and before it was cool.
Yeah, we have that, right. Right. But we like that it's cool now too, because it means that people are used to mixing us at live venues and stuff like that, so it makes our life a bit easier.
And it also brings like another voice to the guitar, and we do, you know, in some of our songs, like, we'll harmonize together, both Asha and I, and it I mean, the violin sounds really badass when it's like playing with a guitar underneath it, and it just brings like this, you know, this really, you know, this great sense of depth to like what would just be a normal sort of guitar solo section. And suddenly, like, we start busting out these harmonies and rocking out together, and crowds just really get off on it.
What is the writing process here? Is it very collaborative, or Low, do you just come in and write the songs? Or
it's so funny. That's what everybody always assumes, that the lead singer writes the songs. I write probably about 50% of the material, and then Ben writes 50, and then probably somewhere over that we overlap with co-writes in terms of just creating a song. And then everybody's in charge of writing their own involvement into the song. Like, no one knows how to play drums better than Richie, so we just let him.
And, like, so Asha comes in and
right,
says, oh, well, this
right.
is what I would do with
well,
the song.
Well, actually, Asha, this time around, she got involved after we had written this record, so her parts were already written. So, but we're just so pumped because we really like, she has, like, a bit more of, like, a blues rock kind of attitude, so we're really interested to see, like, in future songwriting how she lays her parts over, because our previous violinist was very folk-based. So, you know, we definitely pulled her movements to more classical, kind of like orchestral, and so I guess that's then that place we meet in the middle. So yeah, but everybody, Ewan writes his own bass lines, Richie writes his own drum parts and all that kind of stuff, because we just, you know, we like to let people do what they do best, sort
well,
of thing.
Richie, what do you do drumming wise in the band that's sort of, you know, different than you would do for any other band? You know, is there a way that you drum for Porcelain?
I think so, yeah. It's one of those things that As a young drummer, you sort of want to play as much as you can. You know, whatever instrument is, I want to do a fill here and there. But you slowly learn to sort of play to the music and really play to the band and not overcrowd things. So definitely with the band like Porcelain, it's such sort of dense music as it is, that if I was sort of playing really sort of intricate parts, like, say, in a metal band or even a punk band, it wouldn't work out, you know. And so my parts are, I guess, for most drummers, reasonably simple, but they work the best, you know, for the song. And that's what it's about, is, yeah, making sure the parts fit with everything else.
Did you always play the drums?
Yeah, I played keyboard, like piano, when I was young, like a lot of kids do. I guess they start out playing piano, their parents throw them into a class sort of thing. So I played piano for a couple of years, and then just all of a sudden just had this urge to play the drums. Like, I would be in music class and we looking at the back of the room and just looking at the drum kit and like, when do I get to play? When do I get to play, sort of thing. So yeah, it just sort of, like I said, washed over me. Just, I want to be a drummer. Yeah. And then that was it from there.
And then you and Ewan have to work together pretty closely as the rhythm department, mm-hmm. of Porcelain. Do you guys sort of nod to each other during the performances and develop your material together?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we have definitely like a close bond and all that sort of stuff musically. And he's always like right in the ear, sort of my hi-hat side, which is like the predominant sort of timekeeping area of the drum kit. So we're always right there with each other. And we've done sort of shows in cafes back in Australia where we're just going and play drum and bass grooves as a background sort of stuff like that. So yeah, we're definitely sort of tied together. That's what everybody says. Your rhythm section want to be one instead of two people. So yeah.
Ewan, tell me a little bit about your participation in the band, and sort of, you know, I've heard some bands that are these very full sounds, but they didn't have a bass player, and then I heard them later with the bass player, and it's like a whole other band, you know, because it brings that grounding to it, you know. Tell me about your process and involved in Porcelain.
Well, a lot of bass players are usually failed guitarists. So
yeah,
it's like a lot of bass players are just egos that want to bust out and go for it. But when you sort of, if you ever pass that mark and actually realize that you want to be a bass player, which is something I did fairly young. I mean, I didn't actually want to play bass until I met the band, and then they were looking for a bass player, and I was like, I don't really play bass. Actually, I play guitar, and I've occasionally played bass when I was playing with better guitar players. So yeah, I'll give it a go, you know. And I said, yeah, I play bass to them. Totally lying. And
it's a funny
and
story, actually.
Yeah, it was pretty good. And then, you know, obviously when I went, when they told me to come to the audition and called me up, I was like, oh, okay. I thought it was only going to be for one show to fill in. And so I just borrowed a bass off my friend and an amp and went in, and we jammed for a little while. And I was like, yeah, that was cool. And they called me up and said, yeah, cool. Okay, you want to come in? I was like, okay, well, when's the show? And they're like, well, it's in 2 weeks. I was like, whoa, okay. And they're like, yeah, you know, we're going to be playing to quite a lot of people. It's going to be a packed venue. And I was like, ooh, okay. And this at this time, already, Porcelain was a pretty big band in Wollongong, our hometown. And I was like, all right. And they said, so you want to be in the band? I was like, whoa, it wasn't ready for that. But yeah.
Were you a bit hesitant to sort of jump on a train that was already moving so quickly?
Definitely not. No, there was no hesitation because I was already studying music in Sydney at a college. And I was only starting to eventually be in a band anyway. So, and I eventually quit those studies because the studies were actually getting in the way of being in a band. And they were getting frustrated. I was getting frustrated. And I said, look, you know what? The only reason I'm doing this is to be where I am. So see you later. So, yeah, I mean, I just deferred my studies till some other time and so forth. But, yeah, but it was interesting. Starting to play bass in a band. And as again, like, we're really about our songs and not about individual musicians. You know, we're not about screaming solos and everyone trying to sort of show off their technical talents. So it was just, you know, let's write songs, let's try and get the songs as good as they can be, and if it means that I play one note through the whole song, well then so be it. You know, I mean, U2 is one of the greatest bands in the world, but you'd never say that, but you know, the bass player isn't necessarily playing a million notes a minute, so
there's only a few notes in pretty much all of their songs.
Yeah,
actually.
I mean, it's simple bass and drums, generally pretty simple stuff, and yet they're one of the greatest bands in the world and have the greatest songs in the world. And so, you know, I was like, well, I'm definitely going to adopt that, you know, that sort of attitude. And another great thing that I had a teacher tell me one time was that bass is only half an instrument, and that the other half is the drums. And even though I don't play that, I have to be aware of that. And it was really great knowledge, you know, great knowledge to sort of be handed to me, because when I realized that, it was, you know, it became, when I sort of got in the band, I really studied Richie's playing to the point where, like, within sort of a millisecond, I know what feel Richie's going to do and what time and what kind of feel to it. So it's great. I can sort of marry along with that really nicely. So, yeah, which has been a lot of fun, you know. So,
and is this it for all of you guys? You're all professional musicians, and mm-hmm. Porcelain is the project that you devote all your time to.
That's all we do.
Yeah. Nice. Well, let's do some more of it then. Let's do another live song, and I still want to talk to you, Lo and Ben, about why you guys picked up guitar and started to sing as well. So what are you going to play for us now?
We're going to play Bittersweet, yeah.
All right, you're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Porcelain.
Blue-gray tear stains, makeup running down my face like letters left out in the rain. Roses, bruises, faded high school yearbook pictures. I'm saving everything you gave. No matter how many times you hurt me, I'll run back to you. Nobody does damage like you do. Don't hold back, make me cry when I'm broken. I'm alive. Yeah, it hurts, but it's worse when you leave. Cause I love how you taste bittersweet. Same old story, I don't call and you ignore me. Pretending we're happier alone. Oh, no matter how far I run, I always end up back with you. Nobody could love me like you do. Don't hold back, make me cry. When I'm broken, I'm alive. Let it 'cause I love how you taste bittersweet. Walk away, dare you. Walk away. It's so bad we had to quit while we were winning. But ooh, my kitty, if you hurt me, still come back to you. 'Cause nobody does damage like you do.
Listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Porcelain. Lo, when did you first discover that you knew how to sing?
It's a cute story, actually. I didn't discover it. My mom discovered it. I was like 18 months old, and I couldn't string a full sentence really together yet. I could say like lots of words, though. And every morning, my mom would... we had twin laundry tubs, and she would wash the hand wash the clothes in one of the laundry tubs and like bathe me in the other. And we had a little radio like on the other side of the laundry, and it would play like the top 20 or whatever. And like, this is how young I was, because the number one song was Believe It or Not, I'm Walking on Air. And I just started singing it like one day when the radio wasn't on. I just started to sing Believe It or Not, I'm Walking on Air. And my mom's like looking at me like 18 months old, like in tune, in key. And mom's like, oh my goodness. So I think she knew that I was going to grow up to be a show off from that point onwards. And yeah.
Did you go through a series of vocal training or anything like that?
I didn't have any training until I went to college. And then because I wanted to be an actor, that's like all I wanted to be. I wanted to be like a movie star. And so I went to acting school. And then part of my acting training was a classical class that we took. And we were doing our usual acting, rolling around on the floor and pretending to be seeds growing into trees. And then the opera teacher came in, and she said, like, I want you to pretend to be opera singers, you know, like, so everybody puts on their best, like, opera singing. And she said, well, that's actually opera singing, just without the silliness. And then she pulled me aside after the class, and she asked me if I would consider transferring to the opera school instead. She said I had awesome potential. So I actually ended up studying classical singing for, like, 2 years in opera school, and like did a couple of operas and stuff. So that was awesome. And the breath training and the, you know, and all that kind of stuff that I've received from doing that has really like helped push my rock career in the right direction. I think my opera teacher wept when I left school and told her I was going to America to play with
a rock band.
Yeah. She hated my band like when it was in Australia. She's like, I'd say I have a show tonight and I can't come to I can't come to class or whatever the next day, and she'd just be so angry. So never mind.
When you started writing songs, what did you want to say? What did you want to write about?
And well, I was 15 when I first started to play guitar, and I learned to play guitar because singing was my hobby, not my not my career focus. So, what do 15-year-old girls want to say? Are they just so tortured, aren't they? Like, I mean, I look back at some of the songs that I wrote. I think I wrote this song when I was a kid. I was 15 years old, and it was called Too Many Superheroes. And it came from a boyfriend that I had at the time, and he said, nowadays there's just too many superheroes. Like when we were kids, it was like Batman
Spider-Man like an album title or something.
Right. So then we talked about, so then I wrote that song, like, too many superheroes trying to save the world and all this kind of crap. But it was supposed to be some metaphor for like the world is so bad that we need that many superheroes at the time. So I thought I was being really clever, but I look back, it was really elementary and kind of embarrassing.
What are you writing about now, though? What are sort of themes that you keep coming back to?
Love, hope, fear, just love, hope.
Do you keep it mostly freedom, that kind of thing? Abstract in that sort of way, or do you write about things you actually saw or stories of people you know?
My personal style, I think Ben and I's styles like fuse and diverge as well all the time, but my personal style is very prose driven. Like I cut my teeth on like Tori Amos and Arnie DeFranco, even though Tori Amos is quite abstract, you know, there's some moments that she sings and she's so real and so detailed that, you know, and I love Arnie DeFranco and I love Bob Dylan and I love people like that tell a story. Like they'll spend like a whole verse like describing what a room looks like and you're there, you know, like. And for me, I try and do is if I can make somebody feel from a song, then that's sort of like contributing to what I think like my purpose is. Because I think the whole reason why we're so screwed up is that we just don't feel. Like we create all these inventions to separate ourselves from each other. And I think that myself and I believe like the band also sort of shares my sentiment, is that if we can make people feel again, then I really believe that we could start solving some of the world's problems. So, you know, I think you got to have a global vision, yeah, or otherwise, you know, your music's just, you're wasting a great gift, I think, if you don't try and use it to help everybody.
Ben, did you approach music with that same sort of sense of purpose that you had to sort of get, be able to communicate with people?
Initially, probably not. Like, I was quite the introvert when I started, you know, getting into guitar, at least from a musical perspective. And I'd actually played trumpet for about 8 years or so before I really seriously picked up the guitar. And you know, you hit puberty and get to high school and you just can't bust out a trumpet and play along, you know, and have people sing along at parties. And so that became, you know, that sort of pushed me towards the direction of playing guitar. And I spent a weekend away with a friend and he introduced me to Jimi Hendrix. And like, I came home and was like, "Dad, who's Jimi Hendrix?" And he, you know, it was this classic, like a movie scene, put his arm around me. He's like, "Son, come with me," you know, and pulled out a bunch of records from under his bed and blew off the dust. And I never looked back. Like I really, you know, got into like Chuck Berry and Jimi Hendrix and just old school sort of blues stuff. And which pointed me in, you know, in the direction of just being sort of like a blues based guitarist, I guess, for a couple of years and really, cutting my teeth on just learning how to solo and that sort of thing. And then, I wrote a song for a girl for Valentine's Day, which was my first songwriting experiment, and it was received well, to cut a long story short. And and I was like, I could get used to this, you know. And I guess I was always, I guess, lyrical in my head and was very very creative in school, but just didn't know that I could actually have a sense of, there would be a sense of relief and release that would come from writing lyrics. And what, you know, I formed a band, and as most people do, just start off playing covers. And we were children of the grunge era and big, huge Pearl Jam fans. And so I just tried to write a song that sounded like a Pearl Jam song. And, you know, the song was actually quite listenable. And that's how I got my start. And I think as Lo will definitely support me on this. Like I started off, you know, just really being into abstract lyrics and just metaphors, and just, I would never say a straight down the line sentence, you know. And I remember like writing one of my first songs that was just very, you know, very literal. And I didn't even consider them to be lyrics. And yet it's one of the songs that I've received, you know, most praise for. And like when you sort of sit back and like look at those words, which was actually just a literal recount of something that happened in my life, I was like, really, that can be lyrics? Like if you just write about exactly what happened. And so that sort of like kicked me into the other direction. And I'd say like I definitely sit on that side of the fence now, and I come very much from personal experience. And a lot of the time I'll write not really realizing I'm writing lyrics. I just have something in me that I need to get out, and then I'll come back to it later and realize that they actually form quite a good lyric.
How much of Porcelain is the live experience, and how much is the recording experience? Like when you think of your core audience, do you picture them listening to your music in the car or being at a show?
Being at a show. We are, you know, first and foremost entertainers, and that's what, you know, that's what we love to do. And I think you have to be a great live band to survive these days, because it's just such a tough industry, and that's what we love to do. We, you know, Australians love to drink and meet people, and you know, and what better environment than a live show to, you know, have music, a beer, and a good conversation.
What is sort of your your worst live band experience? I'm just curious. I mean, when, especially when you have when you have a complicated sound, there's so many things that can go wrong. And
oh, in terms of how did we? How, what was our worst experience, or what did we? What did, what sort of band have we seen that was just the worst band we've ever seen? Which one?
Well, I meant you, but oh, the yeah. other would make quite an interesting story too. I think.
Oh.
So.
Oh, okay. Well, in terms of us,
I would say there was a couple of shows in Australia. Like LA is a very different scene, obviously, to probably the, you know, the majority of America and the majority of the world, where it's very much a showcase town. And I mean, you can be the second band on and pull the most people for right. that evening. You know, it's not built around a headline act here in Hollywood, at least. And there was quite a few experiences when we were just starting off as a band, as most people experience, where you're playing with it, you get this show and it's with some big name band and everyone's excited and you get everyone and, you know, and their best friend and their dog and everyone to turn up, and then you just get treated like shit because you're the baby band, no one cares right. about who you are. I mean, there was instances where a very special show in Australia at I think it was Shoal Haven, like with an Australian band called the Whitlams, we did what was recommended to us to do. We turned up early. We helped them unload all of their gear. We helped their roadies set up. Did everything we could possibly do to be on their good side. And yet their roadies sound check their gear. Not even the band, but their roadies sound check their gear for 2 hours. So wouldn't have a sound check. And then when we set up and started to play, and they realized we were actually pretty good, they actually turned off the all of the subs in the house, so there was basically no bass. And then they left the house lights on for the first 3 songs of our set. And needless to say, it wasn't the most pleasant of experiences. And we didn't help them load out that night.
And in terms of the worst band we've ever seen, there was this band in a band competition in Australia one time who shall remain nameless, because you just never know who, right? You never know who knows anyone who knows. But they were a punk band, right? Like old school style punk band, like, you know. And then they got on stage and they got through their first song pretty all right. And they weren't that bad, but they got to their second song and they obviously had some miscommunication about how many bars the guitarist plays before the bass player joins him, and then the drummer comes in after that. So they do it once and they get it wrong, and then they're like, fucking go again. And so they do it again and then they get it wrong. And
on
then
stage.
On stage. And then so the guitarist turns to the bass player on stage and he's like, you're fucking it up. He's like, go again. If you get this wrong next time, I'm going to punch you. And so, wow. And we thought it was like part of the act, you know, oh, they're a punk band, you know, whatever.
Right.
And then he got it wrong again. And he was serious, and he starts walking over and starts fisticuffing this dude on stage, like,
oh,
roughing him up and stuff. And then, like, the organizers have to come over and, like, calm him down and say, like, you know, you can't fight on stage, right. or you're going to get, like, booted out of there. They have another go at it, and then by then, and it's so funny because you would think that they would just move on to the next song or something, but it's by then that they figured out they should probably move on to another song. But it's the only time I've ever seen a band actually punch each other out on stage.
That's like, never happened with you guys?
In a set, no.
Not yet.
Close.
And we were later to see, they posted in the same venue, they posted one of their band's posters, and at the bottom it said, we will never be appearing anywhere ever again. Which is classic.
What listening to music that's like really successful now that you hear on the radio, what are some things that you desperately want to avoid doing? You know, directions you don't want Porcelain to end up going. And we talked a little bit before about sort of, you know, being associated with a label and how sometimes, you know, major labels, they try to develop your sound for what mm-hmm. they think is going to sell best. And you guys have been able to maintain your indie integrity.
I think trends are really, you've got to be careful with trends. Like if it's like really cool to use like particular sonics, or if it's really cool to have like, an urban artist like drop a rhyme on your track, or if it's really cool, whatever's really cool, you should try and avoid it, because it's not going to be really cool forever and it's going to date your band. Like, so we just always try, we don't try to genreize our band. We don't try to date it or trend it up or do anything. Like, we just really come from a really organic place, and all we do is just, when we're going to the recording process, try and create the most sophisticated version of what we play live mm-hmm. with, you know, a couple of extra bells and whistles. But we try and use organic instruments then. Like, we try to use, like, you know, like Rhodes pianos or Hammonds, or like actual
good
yeah real samples, as opposed to
whatever the latest cool trick to do.
And I think like people are always going to draw comparisons between a band, and we certainly don't shy away from the comparisons that are drawn, you know, between our music and other people's music. But because we come from a place of we're doing exactly what we want to be doing, then I think that sets us apart from a lot of the bands that fall into trends who actually make a conscious decision to shift into something that's trendy. Mm-hmm.
You guys ready to go into another live song? I don't want us to run out of time.
We only have one more song. So
great.
Whatever,
and then we'll talk about where you guys are playing next. I know you're headed off to South by Southwest, and, yep, and a lot of performances coming up. So we'll do a live song. We'll talk about that, and then we'll leave with that other track that you brought in as well. What are you going to play for us?
This is a song called "Seek to Find" from my abstract lyrical days.
Nice. Do you guys, is there an album out now that people can get your music?
You know, we're just in the mixing process of our record at the moment, but our record will be out probably mid to late summer. But at the moment, like, we're really focusing on our live shows, and we're playing tomorrow night at the Roxy. At 8 p.m. Tonight at the Roxy, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So come have a beer if you're listening.
Mm-hmm. Cool. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Porcelain, whenever you guys are ready.
In the morning, you fought and the deed is done. Long deserted highway, fugitives on the run. The thunder cracks a breeze day, the lightning storm is born. Oh yeah, the mirror paints your reflection like a virgin overworn. I said, do you
shade of bruises. The night's flesh has been mauled. Maroon bar moon surrender, yeah. Your number has been called. Do you
That's why I call the show Is Good, if you didn't figure it out already. My guest is Porcelain. Guys, that was incredible. Thank you so much for coming in.
Cool.
So you guys are performing tonight, and then you're taking off for Austin, for Texas, for South by Southwest. Have you done that before?
No. We're so excited about it, too. It's awesome.
That is exciting.
Right?
Yeah, we'll be in a bunch of cities, which you can find out more information. You can find out more information about those on our website at MySpace/Oz, because we're Aussies. OZ Porcelain.
Ah, I see. I was going to ask what the OZ was for. And,
Land of Oz.
Yes, now I understand. Okay. How did you come up with the name Porcelain, anyway, for the band?
Came from just a conversation Lo and I had one night sitting down. We were tossing around a bunch of different names. And
we wanted a two-word name.
Initially, yeah, we wanted to go with the whole like Green Day, Pearl Jam, like those sorts of
let's get two words. And Ben was like, I really like Porcelain from this lyric, like porcelain skin, and I was like, yeah, but skin is too obvious. Yeah.
And we went through all of these different, you know, these different words like porcelain collection. No, that's
porcelain
too
crash.
Porcelain,
no, that's lame.
Porcelain thought, bathroom fixture.
Like, right. Yeah. Porcelain and
porcelain
just
bus.
Wasn't happening.
And then Lo was like, well, how about we just go with porcelain? I'm like, done. And what usually can take a band a very long time, and it actually is obviously a very pinnacle moment in a band's formation, like actually came about half an hour sitting around with a glass of wine, I think.
Yeah.
It is funny. It's like after you have the name, then the real band can begin.
Yeah, and the name grew to mean a lot more than it started out meaning. We just really liked the word, but like our music is very, very, very strong, but it can also be very fragile. And I think that's kind of like the audio aesthetic of the word porcelain and what it brings to mind. It's definitely, I don't think it's a direct thing. It's just kind of like, oh yeah, that makes sense, you know, in a weird, disconnected way.
How has your music evolved just over in the past few years, like especially since coming to the United States and playing a lot of live shows here?
I would say we definitely started out trying to be very clever in our music, and as we grew as songwriters and as a band, we just, you know, started to appreciate like simplicity within music. And like Richie and you and what were saying before, like great bands, you know, they don't feel the need to show off all the time. And I think like once we'd written a few songs and played a bunch of shows, we started to see what was connecting with people, and we started to really embrace the live show and try and work in aspects into our music that would translate well live, and hence we simplified a lot of what we were doing at that point in time.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we sign off with, we have one more track to play. Maybe you can introduce this for
yeah,
us.
Sure. This song's a lot of fun, and being signed to any label, I think, and I think for any musician, there's a great pressure out there. You know, you've got to write the radio smash hit single, smash in the bucket single, and this sort of crap. And so we were sent away, you know, on a task of writing an upbeat teen anthem that had, you know, for radio. And so we went and we wrote our upbeat teen anthem, but we wrote a song called Fuck the Radio. And yeah, you'll hear it in a second. You'll see what
you
we're
heard
talking
it here
about.
On killradio.org. My guest is Porcelain. You're listening to Is Good.
Here she comes, another young one.
You've been listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is Porcelain, myspace.com/OZPorcelain. And that was Fuck the Radio. Awesome song. You can check them out tonight live if you want. Go to the Roxy. They have a big show coming up. And also go by their MySpace and see all the other shows they have coming up soon.